Today's conversation is going to be epic. We're talking about how do you turn your list into listings. And what I mean by your list is past clients, sphere of influence, old leads. Every time you're coming in contact with somebody new or somebody that you've had relationships with for a long time, it's a relationship you can never let go of because real estate is and always has been a relationship business. But the problem is, how do you streamline and scale your efforts from a marketing standpoint so you can remain in touch and relevant with all your past clients, all your sphere of influence contacts? And to help me in this conversation, I've got two amazing guests. First, the birthday boy, Andrew Flackner. Happy birthday today. President, co-founder of Real Scout, and of course, Jimmy Mackin.
Yes.
Who's on podcast with us all the time.
Yes, great to see you guys.
We just did one, in fact. All right, so this is going to be a super fun conversation, probably a slightly technical conversation, and I want to create some context for why it matters. Why should agents be absolutely resolute about working their own databases in terms of generating listings? Who has a take on that first?
Sure. I mean, I think you have a decision to make on whether or not you're going to invest in expansion tactics, which is where you're investing more in your business, or ROI tactics, which is just getting more from the assets you already own. And what better asset is there than a database?
Yeah, I think it would break agents' hearts to realize how much business they're actually losing. And I think, you know, and I've seen examples of this in the past, but, you know, when someone buys a house or sells a house, that you already know that person, how much that actually hurts. But it happens every day within your database. So I think right now, and we know this to be true, you know, it's so much easier to retain a customer than it is to acquire a new one. There's lots of data on this. But I think what in this market in 2024, you have got to be focused on like the low hanging opportunities, the low calorie, high impact strategies, the things that are going to actually help you go from, let's say, you know, as you said, Andrew, buying leads or acquiring leads, which is great for maybe 9 months or 12 months or 18 months on the road, or the people who are looking to maybe transact in the next 3 months. And I think there's like already being in your database is a bit of a cheat code for agents right now. So yeah, I think right now for this episode and the show, just helping them give tactics, like take advantage of the opportunities you have right in front of you.
Marketing is ever evolving, and with the emergence of AI, the rate of change is faster than ever. Adapt quickly to AI-driven marketing strategies or risk falling behind. This is precisely why we've created the AI Marketing Academy, a 4-week virtual intensive tailored to integrate AI seamlessly into your marketing strategy. You'll start with unraveling the basics of AI, then you'll get to grips with essential AI tools. And finally, you'll learn how to incorporate these tools into effective real-world marketing tactics. Space is limited. Don't miss your chance to be a part of the future. I agree. And I think if you want to throw some data at it, if you look at the National Association of Realtors, they do their annual reports, and invariably the number one source of how listings sellers identify an agent is by way of repeat referral business. It's the people you know and the people they know. It's repeat referral. We know that over half of buyers find an agent by way of repeat referral, and about 2/3 of sellers, it's repeat referral. The gold's right beneath your feet. And it doesn't mean you don't build a geographic farm. It doesn't mean there isn't a use case for investing in strategic lead generation, but it does mean there's a lot of agents hiding from their relationships, and how can they streamline that? And I think, I'm wondering, like, just from your vantage points, what are some of the common reasons why agents don't go looking for what's right beneath their feet within their own database?
They need to have a much higher degree of paranoia. And what I mean by that is, like, is the great line by, I mean, like, Andy Grove, you know Andy Grove, right? The famous Intel founder, CEO, he said, it goes, only the paranoid survive. And right now what happens is agents think that because they maybe reached out 12 months ago, that they've got that one in the bag. Hey, I'm good. I can count on that one. Consumers are going to say, what have you done for me lately? And I'll give you some example on this. 1000 Watt, shout out to Mark Davison, Brian Barrero. They put out a study recently about how many agents does the average consumer know? And I want to say about, and Hector will fact check this, yeah, right? But about 49% of consumers knew 5 or more agents. So that means that if you're not, like, if you're already in, let's say, Andrew's database, chances are you're probably in Jason's database.
You could be on the chopping block.
I mean, I think there needs to be a healthy degree of paranoia that if you're not delivering value regularly, then they're going to find someone else who will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think the other thing to think about, and then I'm going to toss it to you, is a lot of folks go investing in leads because they think, oh, I want to work with somebody who's already declared that they're in the market to buy or sell real estate. It seems like a sure deal to invest in somebody who says they want to buy or sell a house. And after all, my database contacts, they don't want to buy or sell a house. So agents assume mistakenly they overlook the fact that, well, hey, Dunbar's number, the average person knows 150 people, how many contacts are there that could be potential connection points? And the other thing is, and I say this a lot when I'm speaking at events, I talk about how, hey, look, a failure to be building the relationship, if you rely only on leads that say they're ready to buy a house tomorrow, I can assume that about 2/3 of the time, they're never going to list with you. More than half the time, they won't buy with you because they're going to go through an agent they already know, like, and trust by way of repeat referral. What are your thoughts on it?
I mean, I think there's a few holes in the argument that buying a lead is high intent, right? In many cases, it's very shallow intent. I mean, just look at the numbers, the amount of people who are searching on Zillow every month, hundreds of millions. Yeah. How many home sales are there in the U.S. every year?
Not that many.
A few million?
Last year, like 12.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's a faulty argument to think that, you know, just because you buy a lead, they're ready to buy or sell, and they're not ready to buy or sell with you because they don't have a relationship with you. Mm-hmm. So I think our industry has become trained to be coin operated, right? Where you get that dopamine hit every time you get a new lead. Mm-hmm. But if you focus on what's right in front of you, this asset that you've built for years and you paid all this money to generate, you can generate way more dividends from that asset.
Yeah, you bring up a great point, which is there is an addiction to lead generation because the dopamine is so instantaneous. You pay money, you get this alert within your CRM, hey, congratulations, you get a new lead, right? And so it becomes an addictive drug for many agents. And the thought that you said, the point you made earlier, Jason, that I think is really important. Most people have this perception issue with their database. They say, okay, maybe 5% of my database is going to transact this year. So if you get 1,000 people, maybe 50 will transact. And so they look at the other 950 as not an asset, but rather just like, well, we'll just drip on them and we'll just, you know, send them some random thing online once in a while, like, hey, happy birthday, or turn the clocks back, like as if we don't have iPhones, right?
Right.
And so the missed opportunity, and this is a quick pro tip here, is if you think about the people in your database as individuals who can connect you with other people who are looking to buy and sell, then you're going to be a lot more thoughtful about what you put in front of them. So I can say, hey, Jason, I know you're not looking to make a move, but I wanted to reach out because we've got this listing that's about to hit the market and it's been a tough market right now. Who do you know who might be in the market right now? Like, I mean, but the only way you can do that, like what we just did there, is earning it through value add over the life cycle of the customer.
And so I didn't prepare either of you for that, but I want to go right there for just a moment, because I think a lot of agents, they either assume, well, these people aren't looking to buy or sell, to the points you were just making, or they think, well, what if they aren't? I don't want to be that pushy, always talking about real estate agent, which I'm like, well, you are in real estate, but what do you say to that agent in terms of value add? What does that look like?
So I'll quote Mark Davison again from 1000 Watt, who says, you know, don't send gardening tips. You're not a gardener.
I flipping love that.
And the reality is that I agree, the transitive property, like seeing if you can get referrals, that's a really great tactic. But let's not forget that everyone is a future buyer or future seller. Mm-hmm. And so the way I think about a database is that you have buyers and you have sellers, but you have a lot of people who are in between those buying and selling moments. And guess what? They do want real estate information. Yeah. The problem is you're letting them down with your real estate information. If the best tool you have in your toolkit is an MLS property alert, guess what? They're going to go back to Zillow. And so where are they looking for updates on their home's value? Zillow. Where are they looking for listings? Redfin. Where are they seeing what their neighbor's house just sold for? Realtor.com. That's the problem, is that you need to intercept and you need to be able to provide value earlier in the...
I think that's 100%. And I think reality is the goal of any buyer or seller is to make an informed choice. And if you're not informed, you can hardly make an informed choice. And so therefore, it becomes incumbent on every agent to be that continual, perpetual knowledge broker. Yeah. All right, so I want to dive into this. Where do you think most agents, and I'm not trying to be, agents are working hard and they're trying, they want to scale and they want to streamline this. And I don't want to be too negative about this, but where do you think there's an opportunity missed when it comes to nurturing? Yeah. How do you all look at nurturing a database?
Well, let me start at kind of the top of the funnel, right? A lot of people have like IDX on their website, and that is going to be the thing that makes them the same as everyone else, right? As opposed to like what really makes them stand out, marketing 101. Like, you go to an agent's website, and by the way, all the respect to agents, I started Real Scout because I was an agent facing these problems myself. And guess what? I had a traditional IDX website just like everybody else. And above the fold, what was it? A search bar that no one will use, just like everybody else. And so I think we have to start at the top of the funnel. Like, what is this sticky flytrap that you have for your business? And then that will feed into your database.
Yeah. I know this is going to sound ironic, what I'm about to say right now, that like, I'm wearing a shirt that is blending into my chair right now.
Your surroundings. You're floating.
And I think it's a perfect analogy, right? Which is most agents are like me. I mean, they blend in to everybody else.
Zoom in on Jimmy.
Yes, we could zoom into me. I know this. I realize this between podcasts.
If you're listening, you're missing out.
So for me, I think agents right now blend in so much, because they do the same type of marketing, the same type of updates, the same type of whatever drip campaign they got in place. And I think what's interesting is, and the way that my mind works is, I always say real estate is, we do not sell, this is not a knock, but we don't sell, let's say, title, right? Which is very difficult to get people excited about the idea of title. I mean, it's a necessity, but it's not a really, how are you gonna market title? I have no idea. We sell real estate. I mean, real estate is an exciting class. It's a
marketer's, top of the Maslow's hierarchy. It's what people pursue.
It is the dream of a marketer to be able to promote such an incredible product. You always have new products to promote. You have new angles to promote. And so we got kind of, somehow we lost the fun and the excitement and the magic in it. And so I think for me, there's another angle here, which is when I think about marketing, I always think about timely and relevant and valuable. So timely, what's happening literally right now in this moment in the real estate market that my customers, my network needs to know. And let's give a real world example. Taxes. I mean, everywhere I turn, my clients, they're across the US and Canada, they're getting tax bills that are two or three times higher than they were 4 or 5 years ago whenever they did the last assessment. Well, if you are subscribing to an automated drip campaign written by some junior marketer 5 years ago, guess what? They got no idea what's happening in the market. So I think for everyone who's listening right now, this idea of timely, relevant, and valuable information is the cheat code for ongoing database nurturing. And most agents right now are just pushing the same old, tired, repeat, 12-point plan touch, right? That is exciting. I mean, we should be energized by that, because most people don't have that opportunity in marketing.
I remember I moved to Nashville years and years and years ago, originally as a wannabe musician. And I remember when I got there, everybody told me, you've got to subscribe to Bob Levitt's email newsletter. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
And they're like, he's an industry insider and he gives commentary on what's happening in the business. And I was like, okay, I'll subscribe. So I subscribed to this guy's newsletter, and it's just a long essay of him giving timely, relevant information from curated through his brain and his filter and his point of view to help everybody see what was happening like only he could. He was like the Seth Godin of the music business, kind of a vibe. And I start to think about, well, what does it look like to cast yourself as a knowledge broker? Whether it's through email, whether it's through videos or content, by whatever means you want to communicate with your database, I think the idea of being timely and relevant is mission critical. And I think that the consumer wants to hear from you. The consumer is that's your point, Andrew. They need to hear from you, right?
Yeah, but also I think that is where a lot of agents forget that they have an advantage, which is they are the knowledge worker in the transaction. Mm-hmm. The consumer inherently trusts them, right? Especially if you have the relationship. Right. It's almost like if a dentist recommends a certain brand of toothpaste, you'll probably give it a shot. Yeah. And if it doesn't let you down, you'll probably continue to use it. Mm-hmm. But that's where the industry, sometimes gets it wrong.
Yeah. You said something that's worth pointing out here, which is, just one quick point on that. I think we're recording this podcast in February 2024. We're at the Elite Retreat event right now, and there is a lot of optimism and hope going into this year. The reason why I think that is a good thing is because if you look at the last 3 to 4 years, I mean, everybody has tried to disrupt the real estate agent. I mean, prop tech companies came in here, raised billions of dollars to say, hey, the agent is an unnecessary part of the process, we'll replace them. The rise of obviously interest rates trying to crush this industry. I mean, so many things have tried to kill the real estate agent over the last three to five years, really the last 4 years. And what has happened? What has happened is more consumers today are using real estate agents or realtors than there were 20 years ago.
By a lot.
By a lot.
The percentage is from 60% to 80% in terms of use of an agent. It's a lot.
And now, so the real estate agent should have a high degree of confidence that maybe we're not as disruptible as everyone thinks. And so the reason I bring it up is that consumers actually have told us, and they've chosen with their decisions, that they value real estate agents. But we get so caught up in the narrative online around how the agent's overpaid, how they're unskilled. And so we start believing that, and so we feed into that. And so I think the opportunity is, if I'm listening right now around content, is I think right now agents should have a distinct point of view and an opinion about real estate. And too often we're so inclined to be like, oh, well, you know, I just want to give the information. No, you should have an opinion. Like, I'll give you an example of this. The date the rate, or date the rate, marry the house, nonsense we saw, whatever that was.
Like, years back, yeah.
I mean, an agent.
Or, yeah, not that long ago, but yes.
Like 12 months ago. It was objectively the worst advice that anyone could ever give a consumer. And my guy, Jason Cassidy, came out there and he goes, you may have seen the date the rate, marry the house. He goes, I don't like introducing uncertainty in an already chaotic process. And I said, that is a great marketing message. That's an agent who understands consumer behavior and has a distinct point of view. And so while everyone's just like, date the rate, marry the house, guys, like, that's a dumb idea.
But that's the difference between being transactional minded and being relational minded. I love that.
I was just going to say that in this period of chaos, like, there's a triple threat in the industry, right? There's high interest rates, there's a low inventory gridlock, there's the commission lawsuits, and all of that creates a lot of noise and a lot of chaos. And by the way, the consumers want help navigating it. So let me give you an example. I love Jimmy's ZMA strategy, right? Because guess what? Homeowners have a lot of anxiety about what their home is worth and how that's changing, given interest rates, inflationary environments, election year, whatever it may be. They have anxiety about what their home is worth. So if you can provide them some peace of mind, then people are going to turn to you.
So on that nugget, we talked about this before the show started a little bit. Let's unpack the ZMA versus the HVA sort of tactics and strategies. I'm going to go with, you sort of already did it, but explain the ZMA strategy. You're sort of the godfather OG of the ZMA.
Yeah. Well, the basic idea is that we've been coaching send a CMA a day to for agents for years, and it requires work, and a lot of people would sort of get busy and not do it. So the origin of it was like, how can we create a marketing campaign designed to get someone to do something instantly from their phone with very little effort, not to get a listing, but to start a conversation with a potential seller. Mm-hmm. And that marketing,
it's a good distinction,
right? It's a very important distinction. Marketing will never really win you the listing. It will just get you in the room. You're the only person who's going to win the listing. If you have the world's best marketing campaign and you show up wearing a shirt like this, right?
You're going to win the listing. Nobody's going to compete.
But like, if you show up and you're a dud and there's not a connection, they're like, hey, thank you so much, but we're going to probably go a different direction. So marketing gets you in the room. So the ZMA strategy is take your client's listing, go to Zillow, type in their address, take a screenshot of this estimate and say, hey, Zillow estimates your property, or I was on Zillow earlier today looking at your property. They estimate your home is worth $1.8 million. Share the screenshot. I have my opinion. I'd love to hear your thoughts. And I mean, that is a dead simple 3 to 5 of these per day way to have a lot more conversations with sellers.
And I love the way you frame it. The distinction is it's a conversation starter.
Correct.
That gives you an opportunity to cast some insight about what's happening relative to their home and their value and what search portals say their home may or may not be worth in today's given marketplace. Yeah. Now let's juxtapose. Talk, Andrew, if you would, as sort of the king of HVAs or home value alerts.
Yeah, home value alerts. These became popularized by certain products that catered to the lending industry and then opened up to real estate agents and teams. And one of the things that they got right was that they were introducing some clarity and some certainty for consumers when they needed it. The problem was that these home value alerts from other companies, they proposed one value estimate. And what that did is it ended the conversation with the consumer, because the consumer, they saw the numbers, they said, okay, great, I have my answer. I don't need to reach out to Jimmy. I think I have it taken care of. Or worse yet, the number was very wrong. And then Jimmy looks like a bozo because he, you know, presented himself as an expert and had this very wrong value estimate. So this idea that we had was to put the Zestimate in the value estimate, like make sure that the Zestimate is in the home value alert, because guess what? Your clients are going to go there anyway. But then put it next to a different value from a different reputable, automated valuation model. And what that does, it's almost like tactical confusion, right? Yeah. Because then the consumer is going to say, well, wait a second, is my home worth $1 million or is it worth $900,000? I got to reach out to Jimmy to make sense
of the
market.
Starting a conversation.
And just like the ZMA strategy where Jimmy's recommending plopping a post-it on the piece of paper that says, hey, is this right? there is literally a yellow digital sticky note on this alert that says, hey, there's a large discrepancy between these two values. Reach out to me to help make sense of the market.
Yeah, I love that. It actually reminds me of Wendy's, ironically, where
you think about the spicy chicken nuggets.
Yes, as you can tell, I have young kids, so we're at Wendy's a lot. But you know, it's a famous story of Dave Thomas, where he was a KFC disciple, and he got fired from KFC, started Wendy's, and he rolled out the single cheeseburger and the double cheeseburger. And for whatever reason, the double cheeseburger wasn't selling, and so he tried to solve the problem by saying, well, what can we do to market this better? So then he introduced the triple cheeseburger to sell. So no one bought the triple cheeseburger. This is like whatever, 1960.
High anchor.
Right? It was the high anchor. So by showing options, it oftentimes can help create a conversation or at least guide that person to where they want to go. So I love the idea. And I love the idea of what you said here, which is by using other people's valuation and then saying, hey, this number actually seems far off. Like, we should have a conversation about this. I mean, there is no better source for the value of a home than a professional real estate agent. They know the market because they know the buyers. And I'll give you an example of this too, Jason. If you talk to the average agent in Phoenix, as an example, let's say around 2021, late 21, early 22, and they said, hey, do you think it's a good idea to buy these homes at this price? The average agent be like, no, this is a terrible idea. Yet Open Doors algorithm said, let's keep buying. And, but the boots on the ground already felt the softening in the market. They already felt the affordability crisis hit the buyers, because it happens way faster than some of these forecasting models can predict. Mm-hmm. So I think agents need to, in many ways, insert themselves back into the conversation, even if they're using automated tools. As you say, Andrew, I love it. Like, use automated tools to get you back into the conversation, not replace yourself in the conversation.
But I think each one of these strategies has its strengths, right? I mean, the ZMA strategy is a little bit more manual, it takes a little bit more effort, but it's going to be extremely high converting because it's very personalized, right? The HVA, whether you're using our software or another product, it's going to result in something that's more scalable, more repeatable. It's probably going to have lower conversion than if you print something out, write a handwritten note, put a post-it on there, et cetera.
But it's incredibly, so we had Jamie, we started a conversation yesterday.
I know.
We're here at Elite. And I actually had the same conversation with Andrew this morning before the podcast. So we talked about, if anybody watching or listening could picture sort of quadrants, top right, bottom left, bottom right, four quadrants. And you have this dichotomy between high impact, low impact, high effort, low effort. And sometimes a task can be high effort, high impact, or it could be high effort, low impact, or it could be low effort, high impact. And it's about finding that balance. And when we look at these two approaches, they both have merit in their own respective ways. And it's not an either or, it's a yes and, where I would make the argument that what you're talking about, the ZMA, is so much easier than a CMA a day. I mean, it's so much easier. Yet even the automatic valuation, when you start getting it, you're doing 3 to 5 a day. But if you have a database that's gargantuan in size, you really make a use case or a strategic decision like, hey, you should consider HVAs because you need to go at scale more rapidly and you need that elasticity built into it. I think one of the takeaways I'm hearing from both of you guys, though, and I think you're both spot on, is all roads lead to the agent. All roads lead to the boots on the ground. And I'm thinking of a slide that Tom showed this weekend here, or this week in Orlando for Elite Retreat. It was an image of a lion staring in a mirror and seeing a kitty cat. And I have this picture in my mind of, here these agents are. They are the authority on their local marketplace, yet they get intimidated by the influence of large national, international conglomerates that they think know more than they do, but they're the ones who are behind. And the agents are the ones who are the lions and should see the reflection of their true power and knowledge.
I think where Andrew and I are so in sync on some of these ideas, I think all of us for that matter, is that agents right now have gotten really comfortable, I think, just falling into the trap of doing low value, right? Low effort marketing. Yeah. I mean, like, so if you think about that quadrant Jason just broke down, it's like, yeah, we do some marketing. It doesn't really take us a lot of effort, but there's literally no value to it. And so we got so comfortable in that space. We're like, no, if we just, whether you do an automated one where you push the value up, which is what you should do, or you do a manual one, a little bit more effort, a little more value. The point is, like, if you do an assessment of the things that you do, I think it's always the good gut check test, which is like, would I hire myself? If I didn't know myself, right? Yeah. Based on what I got and what I've been receiving, and like, there's a, DoorDash, famous story recently. So DoorDash, you know, food delivery service, everyone knows DoorDash is. And they were having difficulties with their engineers. And because the engineers were a little bit out of touch for the type of features they want to build for the product. So these engineers who were probably making $300,000, $350,000 a year, just salary, not even earnings, right? They're like, we want you to be a Dasher. We want you to get in the car and we want you to go to the restaurant, pick up the food. We want you to deliver it to you know, the hungry college student. And so obviously, as being engineers, they were not very receptive to new ideas. They said, no, like absolutely not. People quit because of this. But it was such an incredible exercise, which is when the expression in Silicon Valley is eat your own. Right?
I was just about to say.
Right? Yeah. It's like, so we have to, from a real estate marketing perspective, we have to, in some respects, eat our own dog food. We have got to subscribe to our own alerts, get our own emails, watch our own videos. It's going to be super uncomfortable, but would I buy for myself? Would I hire me? And if the answer is objectively no, then
Found the leak.
Yeah, we found so I think raising that bar of quality is always the strategy, no matter what you do.
Totally. You were going to add to that?
Eat your own dog food. I mean, that's something that we preach at our company. I mean, we were birthed out of Silicon Valley, and that's the saying in Silicon Valley. And it's not only would you hire yourself, but would you use the data and technology that you have? Because I can't tell you how many agents teams that I meet, and they say they're so proud of their website, and they're so proud of their home search. And then I ask them, what do you use for home search? And they have the Zillow app on their phone.
Yeah.
That should tell you a lot about an agent who is the expert preaching something that they themselves won't even use.
Yeah, I love that.
I love that. Guys, this has been an incredible conversation. And I think just some of the takeaways I'm hearing is the agent is the most knowledgeable to weigh in, to help give the information a consumer needs, a seller needs, to decide if it's the right time to sell or generating repeat referral business. There's gold beneath the feet of every agent who's listening or watching this podcast in terms of working their relationships. And it seems like the biggest drop ball in lead nurturing is not nurturing, thinking you can be quiet, thinking that they're going to come to you when they're ready. And that is a critical mistake. What are your final thoughts as we wrap up today?
Sure. I was going to echo what you said. Essentially, if you are not nurturing your contacts, someone else will. And that's going to result in, you might think you have a database, but as we said earlier, you might actually have a database, which is a database of stale leads. And if you want to resurrect them from the dead, you actually need to nurture your database.
So show the camera the shirt if you're watching. It's worth seeing the shirt. Both of these guys are wearing awesome shirts today, apparently.
You have to include me in that, Jason. Thank you.
No more database.
So the final thoughts here is we did an analysis of one of the largest MLSs in the country last year, Curator, and we try to understand what do the top agents do differently than the average agent. We all know the NAR stats, 89% of people say they'd use their agent again, whatever, 12% actually do. When you analyze the top 10% of agents in the largest MLS in the country, what you find is their retention rate, meaning buyers who choose them to sell their property when they list it eventually, is 4 times higher than the average agent, according to NAR. I mean, they're retaining their customers at a much higher rate. So what the takeaway here is that if you want to become a top agent in your market, you got to start acting like it. And that requires you to focus on the people who already know, like, and trust you, and focus on that nurture game.
It's about not the next deal. It's about managing and serving and shepherding your flock, your customers, and then having that trust built into it. And it's going to be a flywheel of more and more business. And the truth is, I remember Tom used to have a joke. What's the thing people do about every 10 years? And the answer was buy or sell real estate, roughly in that every decade period. People's intent, it will resurrect, it will renew, it will refer. There are so many opportunities within your database if you just do the work of having the relationship first and then trust the fact that the transactions will flow back to you. And again, it's not a slam to say you shouldn't invest in your farm. You should invest in relationships in your farm. You should work to manage relationships with your leads. But it is always about the relationship. I want to know what you think. If you're watching, listening, wherever you're at, streaming this particular podcast, let us know in the comments, what are you doing or what are you working to do this year to nurture your database to ensure that every referral, every listing, every opportunity comes your way. Until next week, thank you so much for watching This Week in Marketing.